You're listening to Hottery Humble.
Welcome, welcome to episode 8 of Hard to Be Humble. I am the humblest man on earth, Tommy Stickle. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for being here, because honestly, it's been a rough one, as you all know. What have we done? There's no reason. I'm sitting here just in awe of how bad and unlucky and how much pain we as Arkansas Razorback football fans have to endure. What have we done? We must have done something horrendous somehow, unbeknownst to us. We must have. We've done something catastrophic. I just know we have. Did we build the stadium over an Indian burial ground? Do we have witch doctors out there just somewhere in the world just wishing harm on us? I don't know. But we've done something awful. I just know it. There's no other explanation for what has happened and what continues to happen. We are at the absolute depths of despair. We're at the bottom. This is it, guys. What could be worse? I don't know. What could be worse? I guess we could have just lost last week, too. I mean, I don't know what truly is rock bottom. You'll never know. It just keeps getting worse. Man, kudos to you. I'm just going to say it. Kudos to you for continuing to care enough to turn on a podcast, to fill your ears up with more information. Kudos to you, Razorback fan. You deserve better. And this week, I want to start out the show by doing something a little bit different. Typically, we save our famous Arkansan of the Week segment to the end of the show. But this week, we're going to lead it off with it. Why? Because I've got something extra special for you all. I've got an actual interview with my famous Arkansan of the Week. So I feel like this is a special treat. And the famous Arkansan of the Week for episode 8 is Gary Adams. And you might be wondering, maybe you've heard that name before. He played for the Arkansas Razorbacks in the 1960s in the golden era. You'll hear a lot more about him and his life coming up, but he currently lives in Little Rock. I believe he's lived in Arkansas his whole life. He was born, raised, played football for the University of Arkansas. He was a cornerback at his time at the University of Arkansas and won a lot of honors there. He's been recently, as of this year, inducted into the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame. So if you're in a Hall of Fame, you're famous. Just let's be real on that. So y'all sit back and enjoy this segment with Gary Adams, the famous Arkansan of the Week. This week, I have a very special guest who I'm honored to speak to and honored to have on the show. This gentleman is a three-time All-Southwest Conference first-team cornerback in 1966, 67, and 68. Part of the U of A Sports Hall of Honor in 2011. In 2019, earlier this year, he was inducted to the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame, and he was the team captain of the 1968 Arkansas Razorback football team that beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. So pleased to welcome Gary Adams to the show. Thank you so much.
That's a pretty good introduction there, Tommy.
Yeah, I honestly had to edit it down a little bit. So that's always a neat thing to be able to tell about someone, is to edit down the accolades.
Well, I tell you, it was a great opportunity for me. As you know, I'm from a little town up in northeast Arkansas, Piggott, not too far from where you were born. In
absolutely, Perry, yes.
And, of course, I kid anybody I know from Perigual that we played in high school. We played Perigual. And most of the 3 years that we played them, we beat Perigual. And, of course, Piggott was a real small little town, and Perigual was a lot bigger than Piggott. So we took a lot of pride in beating those Perigual Bulldogs.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. The Perigual teams, we just couldn't, you know, I don't even know if Green County Tech wasn't probably even around back then. Maybe it was, but, you know, those Perigual football programs, they just can't, they never seem to quite put it together. But, yeah, I read somewhere in some research that, you know, you were the starting quarterback there, I think, from your sophomore year in high school on, and definitely went on a pretty, I don't know how, it sounds historic, but a pretty long win streak there, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, I think once I started playing quarterback about the middle of the season my sophomore year, then my junior and senior year, I think we won like 23 straight games.
Wow.
And didn't push back in those days, Tommy, you know, you played both ways. We only had 22 maybe 23 one year on our team, so we had to play both ways. And you know, it gave us an opportunity to up in Northeast Arkansas to not only play some of the teams in the northeastern part of the state, but we would play Kennett, Missouri, and we would go over to Malden and play Malden. So, but yeah, we had a pretty good run back there in the, I guess it was 63, 4, and 5.
Incredible, incredible. So tell us a little bit about that transition then, I guess, to come to the University of Arkansas to play football. I'm sure that recruiting nowadays versus what it was back then is probably quite a bit different, but what was that like? And was it an immediate sell, you know, where when you were, I guess, offered a scholarship, was it no question in your mind?
Yes, there was a question. It's a kind of an interesting story. My junior year at Piggott, Coach Frank Bulls came to Piggott to speak at our athletic banquet. And to be quite honest, we didn't, up in northeastern Arkansas, we didn't really know a whole lot about the Arkansas Razorbacks. You know, it was Memphis State was closer to us, mm-hmm. even Missouri, you know. I knew more about Memphis State, Arkansas State, of course, Missouri, those schools. But we had an athlete on our team there at Piggott that was one year ahead of me. His name was Tommy Dixon. And Tommy was actually a much better athlete than I was. He was our running back, and he was also a defensive back in high school. And Coach Bulls actually came over, I think, more than to speak at our athletic banquet. He came over to recruit Tommy Dixon.
Oh, okay.
And so when he came, he told me, he said, "Gary, I've seen you on film." You know, of course, Tommy, back in those days, we had film. It wasn't that long ago, so back in the 60s.
But gotcha.
Coach Brawl said, you know, keep doing well. He said, I've seen you on film. He said, I'd like to come back and you know, maybe offer you a scholarship next year. So, you know, that was on the back burner in my mind. One of my concerns was my size. I wasn't real big. And Tommy, of course, he went on over to Arkansas. And back in those days, freshmen couldn't play on the varsity.
Right.
We had our own Schultz team. But I kind of kept up with Tommy. And of course, my senior year, we had an undefeated season also, and got the opportunity to go over and visit. And Tommy was the main reason that I think I decided to go to Arkansas, is because he convinced me that I could play there. I was about 5'10", weighed about 180 pounds. And, of course, went over as a quarterback and got over there, and they put me at quarterback my freshman year. And then my sophomore year, Coach Johnny Majors, who was the defensive back coach, mm-hmm. came to me and he said, "I'd like to talk to you about moving to defense." He said, "We're kind of thin in the secondary, and I think if you move over to defense, you have a pretty good opportunity maybe to start as a sophomore." And I thought, well, you know, I took a look at the offensive situation, and there were like three really good quarterbacks ahead of me. John Brittenham was one of them. Ronnie South was another one. So I also, Gordon Norwood was a pretty good quarterback from Pine Bluff. And those guys, I felt like were, you know, if I played, it was only going to probably be my senior year. And so I took Coach Major's offer, and I moved to the secondary, which turned out to be a real good thing for me. And one of the things that people don't realize is that Tommy Dixon that I was talking about, he ended up his senior year and my senior year, I did not get redshirted, but Tommy did. And we both ended up playing, starting in the secondary, our senior year at Arkansas. And that was pretty neat. Two guys on a little small football team in Northeast Arkansas being starters for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, that sounds really neat. Neat story about, you know, your friend Tommy kind of dragging you along. But, you know, it's pretty neat how your sophomore year, I saw some stats from you, and I think that year you had 7 interceptions or close to that. I'm sure one thing I wanted to ask about is kind of reflecting back, when you think back to your playing days, do you ever have kind of flashbacks to those moments and kind of place yourself in those games and remember it that vividly, almost play by play? Or over the course of time, does it kind of, smudge together a little bit in memory?
It kind of smudges together in memory. There are half a dozen or so plays that I remember, and games also. I mm-hmm. mean, my sophomore year, I guess the best game that I had was when we played Texas at Texas, and we beat them 12-7. And I was fortunate enough to get a couple of interceptions in the fourth quarter.
Awesome.
One was in the end zone, and the other one was on about the 20-yard line. But it was a situation where that kind of gave me a little recognition, I guess, as a sophomore. And then I ended up for the season with 7 interceptions, and made all conference that year, and was voted the outstanding sophomore defensive player of the year in the conference. So I got a lot of recognition. But I want to say this. There was a guy that played in front of me that was a heck of a football player. He was on the line. He was a defensive tackle. And what made my job so much easier as a defensive back was him rushing the passer.
Oh, okay.
And his name was Lloyd Phillips. And Lloyd Phillips was the Outland Trophy winner in 1966, the year I was a sophomore. And, a defensive back, you got to recover those receivers, but you got to have some rush on the quarterback. And Lloyd, he was just an avid rusher, and quarterbacks many times would let the ball go a little bit too soon. And when that would happen, I'd be back there looking for that ball, and was fortunate enough through us being ahead most of the year, a lot of the teams were passing to try to catch up with us. So. I give Lloyd an awful lot of credit for my success that I had as far as interceptions.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's definitely a team game. I feel like defense is definitely like that. You know, it takes the defensive line pressuring the quarterback to throw up, the prayers for you to then come down with and use your athleticism and speed to go hunt it down. One thing I was going to ask, back then when you were playing, was the Texas Longhorns, I assume that they were still doing the hand gesture that they made very famous. Was it a thing back then where you could do the horns down, against them, or has that not been a thing yet?
No, they were, that was going on back in those days.
Nice.
Particularly from the fan perspective.
Got
From a player perspective, one of the things that we did not do is, we did not go out, and it was a team effort. There was, of course, there was no social media back then. It was different. We were focused on the game. We were focused on what it took to win the game. And that's something that I think in the last few years we've lost at the university. I think this last game this past week showed that there's too much individual play. There's not enough team play. And until we get that turned around, this could go on for a while.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I agree. I feel like when you make your team too spread out and people from different states, I think that there is value. Even if there's a kid in Arkansas who might not be the most talented kid, and there might be a kid in other states who might be more talented, there is value to having those kids that will literally give everything they've got on the field, sacrifice no matter what it takes to make the play. And I feel like there's no other way to get that in you other than being from the state and rooting for the team from when you're a little kid,
Well, Ken Hatfield, who I have a lot of respect for, and Ken and I, we talk from time to time, but I remember, Coach Hatfield would always say that you're better off having a player from the state of Arkansas that may not be quite as good as a player from outside the state. But like you said, Tommy, grew up here in Arkansas, knows the Razorbacks, wants to be a Razorback more than anything in the world. That player is we got to get those players. Mm-hmm. And what's happened for many years, a lot of players are leaving the state, going somewhere else, and but I do feel like if we've got 6 or 7, 8, whatever it might be, players that can play at the level of the Southeast Conference that are here in the state of Arkansas, then we have to sign those guys, to be successful.
I agree. And one other thing you mentioned was obviously Frank Broyles was your head coach while you're at the University of Arkansas. I think you also, your senior season, got to play for an all-star type of game or all-American game where Bear Bryant was your coach for that. Anyways, it just seems like there were a lot of excellent, excellent coaches. You know, Johnny Majors, another coach you had at U of A, that you probably learned a lot of maybe life lessons from, for sure a lot of football knowledge from, but can you speak at all to that? Maybe things that you've taken from your time with Frank Broyles and your experience as an Arkansas Razorback that's kind of propelled you through your life, even as a professional?
Well, I'll use Coach Broyles as probably the biggest example of that. Yes, you learn a lot of things from your coach. I learned a lot from my high school coach. You know, when you win 23 straight games in a row, the coach is the one that kind of makes that all happen. And, even at Piggott, we did everything we possibly could for Coach Carl Williams. And then when I went to Arkansas, it was almost that Coach Broyles was an awful lot like Coach Williams.
Interesting.
And Coach Broyles didn't coach us as much as he would coach the assistant coaches. And the assistant coaches would coach us. But, when you would look at all these assistant coaches that Coach Broyles would bring in to the University of Arkansas, and, you know, at the time we didn't know what was going on, but, you know, what was going on, like Coach Majors, you know, he came to Arkansas from Mississippi State and stayed at Arkansas for 4 or 5 years with the understanding that Coach Broyles would help him get a head coaching job somewhere else. And then that happened over and over and over again. You know, Barry Switzer, Jimmy Johnson. You can just mm-hmm. you can name them all. But that was something that it was a system that Coach Broyles had, and he knew that he had to have good young minds, football minds, around him. And that's what he did. He'd bring them in for 3, 4, 5 years, and then they'd be gone. And we'd wonder, well, why would Coach Majors leave? Mm-hmm. That was part of the plan. And not only with him, but, Hootie Ingram. He was another defensive back coach at Arkansas and coached me 1 year. And, you know, he ended up being the Clemson and went on and was the AD at Alabama for 12 or 13 years. So, the things I learned a long time ago through football, you cannot be successful by yourself. It takes a team effort. And in business, it's a team effort. Can't do it by yourself. You got to have people around you that believe in you. You got to believe in them. And, I use things in our business, Tommy, every day that I learned through athletics.
That's great, great, great advice. Yes, thanks. Thanks so much for sharing that today. Thanks so much for talking with me today. Before we leave here, I wanted to give you maybe one last opportunity to leave a message for maybe Hog fans right now. I know a lot of us are kind of feeling down about the team. You were a great player during what many consider to be the golden era of Razorback football, and we might be in, I don't know what the opposite of golden is, but we might be at the one of the lowest. So if you had a message maybe for Razorback fans, what would it be right now?
Well, I guess it's changed slightly since this game Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Up until Saturday, what I saw Saturday was 4 or 5 things. And I don't want to be negative with this, but it's just what I saw. I saw, number one, our talent is not what it needs to be. Saturday, the effort was not there. And that's the coaching situation. We got to get those players to put in the effort that they need to. You know, we should have beaten that team Saturday, no doubt about it. But we didn't. The desire to do that was not there Saturday. And another thing that I saw that bothered me is I don't think we played as a team. There was too much individual play. Just a situation where we got to be all on the same page. Depending on what happens with Texas A&M, not saying we have to beat them, but we have to show some strong improvement. Or it's going to be a very, very long season. Now, I do think, Tommy, there's a couple of games we can win, maybe three, but we could lose those also. So, and I know right now, I went to the Touchdown Club yesterday and, heard our athletic director talk and he kind of laid everything on the line. He said, we're down right now. We got to get this thing turned around. And he says, I feel like that Coach Morris is the coach that we need to do that. And I believe that too. He's been at it just a little over a year. Got to give him time. So I'm willing to be patient and give it some more time. But it's a situation where we've got to show some improvement. And that's what I'm hoping for, some improvement.
I'm right there with you. Well, thanks again so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to have you on, and let's hope that we can beat Texas A&M. Let's do it.
Thank you, Tommy.
So where do we go from here? What a disappointing performance that we saw on Saturday against San Jose State, one of the worst FBS teams in America. And I don't really remember how much I mentioned this last week on the podcast, but coming off of the Colorado State win, it felt good the way we won it. It felt like we pulled it out in the fourth quarter. I think a lot of people were glossing over they got the high, the emotion, the good feelings from it, and kind of forgot how we were pretty lackluster for the majority of that game, and it was tied going into the fourth, and we really let that one slip away too, until we finally took hold of it at the end. But Colorado State is a terrible team, and I think we kind of lost sight of that a little bit, of how bad Colorado State is. We were happy to win. But man, our margin of error, our margin for victory is so slim now. Going into this San Jose State game, I saw that we weren't starting four of our normal starters due to various reasons. I think injuries, concussion protocol, Colton Jackson, our left tackle, one of our pretty much our, I even hate saying our best offensive lineman, one of our most tenured, I'll call him that, offensive lineman, Traylon Burks, also out for the game. Monteric Brown, Busta Brown, also out. And there was a fourth. And when I saw that, I was like, uh-oh, we better show up today because we've got some key players out. We got some key players on all sides of the ball. And sure enough, we felt it the whole game. One of my big observations that I watched through the whole game was our secondary, Ladarius Bishop and Jarquez McClellan. Jarquez kind of, he held his own a few times, but also made some mistakes that we've seen. But man, they picked on Ladarius Bishop, number, I believe, 24. Let me double check that. Yes, number 24. He actually ended the game with the most tackles on our team, and it was because they were picking on him, and they kept throwing to his receiver, who he just could not cover. And that was the direct replacement for Busta Brown, and I'm sure going into the game they saw that, and they knew that was an area they could exploit, and they exploited it really well. So kudos to them for doing the right thing. But man, that was so disappointing to just see their wide receiver beat our secondary time after time again. It seemed like we had no answers at all. And let me just say it. Starkle Stunkle.
Boo, you stink!
terrible, terrible, terrible game from Nick Starkel. Ultimately, I think had he had a better game, you know, let's say he only threw two picks instead of five, probably would have won, you know. You hate pinning it fully on one person. There are plenty of people made mistakes. You can't pin it on one person for a loss. You never can. But if you had to give one guy who really killed us on multiple occasions, Nick Starkel would be the guy that you would pinpoint as if he had had a better game, the outcome could have been a lot different. I understand he was pressured a lot. He had a lot of adversity in the pocket, and he made some good plays in the pocket, but still, he made some really bad throws. He was really off at times in this game, and I think he's done a great job post the game to kind of take ownership of that loss and say how he's got to get more serious. And I think it's kudos to Coach Morris for kind of sticking with Starkel. I think in previous shows, I have made jokes about what will Morris do if Nick Starkel were to come out against San Jose State and throw four picks, six picks. I think I've even done it twice. Just thinking of how absurd that would be and how Morris would respond to it and what I think the right thing to do would be. Sure enough, goodness gracious, how in the world did that happen? How in the world did that happen, guys? How did it happen? He threw five interceptions. It's unbelievable what happened. Oh, my. But kudos to Morris. I think he did the right thing. He stuck with his guns. He stuck with Starkel. I think that's still the right move. You still see moments when the offense clicked in the game. I rewatched the game, and you see, you know, plays that Starkel made that I don't think Ben Hicks would have made. Positive plays. I'm sure one could make the argument that Ben Hicks wouldn't have made the negative plays either, but he made some good throws. Our wide receivers looked good at times. There's a lot more we could go into the game, but realistically, there is just a lot of bad stuff there, and I don't think a lot of people want to relive all that and rehash a lot of that. It was just bad stuff. Let's move on. It's probably the worst loss Arkansas's football program has had in the modern era, for sure. Some people say that the loss to the Citadel in 1992 is our worst we've ever had, and that could be the most disappointing loss we've ever had. It's up there, but I still think this is probably the worst loss we've ever had, ever. And that's saying a lot. Andrew Hutchison with Hogbeat.com and also Rivals he released a great article documenting the 10 worst losses in Razorback history. And, you know, obviously you should go find that article. It's great. It's not great. It's terrible, actually. But it's interesting. And it's interesting to see that three of the top five losses in this article all came under Chad Morris. Three of the top five, guys, of the worst ever. And, of course, they would be the Colorado State loss last year, and also the North Texas loss from last year, which, honestly, the North Texas loss felt the worst because they just absolutely demolished us, just not even a competition, like, totally steamrolled us. Guys, you hate saying it, you hate it, but you know it. Chad Morris is just not a winner. He's not going to put the pieces together and be great. There's a chance that I think Chad Morris can get things back to a respectable level or an average level. I'll put it that way. I think he can get us back to average. Given enough time, he can get us back to, you know, bowl eligibility. And I call that average. And some might not even call that average, but, you know, 6-7 wins. There's a chance Chad Morris can get us there. But I really don't think you give him more than 5 or 6 years he'll ever reach past that. Given what I've seen, given the way he responds to adversity, given the way he prepares the teams, I just don't see it, guys. I have zero confidence in what he brings to the table. And I know some people are calling for his head or calling for him to be fired immediately, and he probably deserves it. If you ask me, he deserves to be fired. But I don't think that's the right move for the University of Arkansas or for the program or for the student athletes at large. You know, I think that's what a lot of fans do, is they think, does he deserve it? Yes, then we should. But I do not think that's the right move for us to do at this time. I think it would just bring more chaos into the scenario, and I don't think it would attract any decent coach at the end of the season. We would basically just be doing an experiment for the rest of the year. We don't have a good interim coach at all. It would basically be one of Chad Morris's guys. John Chavis is not a head coach type of guy. You put him in charge, and what offense are we going to run? Like, I have no idea. But John Chavis isn't the guy. To be honest, I think there's only two options, period, that could be interim head coach type of material, and that would be Jeff Traylor, who actually is a fairly good candidate, but he's such a Morris guy. Who knows what that would do? He was the interim coach for the bowl game for SMU when Morris was hired to us. I honestly think the guy that I would trust the most as the interim head coach is our tight end and special teams coach, Barry Lunney Jr. He played for Arkansas. He coached at Arkansas with Brett Bielema. He's kind of the only holdover that his loyalty is to the program. You know, he stayed when he didn't have to. He wants to be at Arkansas. He knows Arkansas. He knows the coaches. He's good at recruiting Arkansas players. I trust Barry Lunney more than any other coach on our football staff. And I have no idea if Barry Lunney's head coaching material. Absolutely no idea. But if you told me who I would put in charge, if I had to pick a guy, that would be my pick. So let's talk about the Razorbacks we love that we follow each and every week in our Razorback Exo segment, Rakeem Boyd and Matteo Soli. Both started, which is always great. Rakeem had not a terrible game. He actually didn't quite get up to 100 yards rushing, which I know is your typical benchmark for a good game for a running back. He had 91 rushing yards. He had 3 catches for 10 yards as well. And I thought 0 TDs. One interesting thing, though, that I saw on the stat sheet for him, he actually had 2 tackles. So there you go. He actually had more tackles than a lot of people on our defensive line. In fact, he had more than Sosa. I don't really like calling out specific players, but yeah, Sosa I'm a bit disappointed with today. Yeah, so Rakeem had 2 tackles and actually a forced fumble. So there you go, Rakeem. Not only getting in on the offensive side of the ball, but I guess you call that the defensive side of the ball, you know, after an interception, getting some tackles, but oh goodness, Rakeem. Thanks for being awesome. Thanks for being good. We're still your biggest fans, man. And Matteo. So Matteo, again, he started. Honestly, no one on our defensive line had a great game. Our defensive line was very lackluster. And Matteo did have two tackles, though. He was accredited for 2 tackles, 1 solo, 1 assisted. And that was about it. That was about all he accumulated on the stat sheet. I think overall, there was a lot on our defensive line that was pretty disappointing. But we still expect more from Matteo. I hope he just keeps getting better. Still can't wait for his first sack. And here's to better games. Here's to better games. Arkansas has made headlines with TMZ this week. Never a good thing to be in a headline with TMZ. What are we in the headlines for? Arkansas QB Nick Starkel blames Justin Bieber shirt for 5 interception game. Quote, no more nonsense. Wow. Yeah, TMZ's pretty good at dramatizing a headline. Am I right? Obviously, this isn't the case. Nick Starkel did not blame his 5 interception game on the Bieber t-shirt. You know, all this started from a tweet that Nick Starkel sent out, I believe on Sunday, saying, Bieber shirt has been ripped in half and thrown away. No more nonsense, no more distractions. All I'm focusing on is this team and this season, nothing else. Peace. In and of itself, that sounds good, I guess. I'm glad that Nick Starkel is trying to clear his head and put his priorities straight. Seems a bit odd that one would have to tweet this in the first place, right? You know, just zoom out, think of it big picture. Feels a little weird if you think of it from that perspective. But hey, you know, I like where Nick Starkel's head's at. You know, he's basically saying, let's buckle down, let's get serious here, folks. Well, then, of course this would happen. Somehow, Justin Bieber sees this, and on his Instagram story,
which who knew he was paying such close attention to this? I don't know. Says Justin Bieber calls out Nick Starkle, and on his story says, takes a picture of it and says, "I'm disappointed," with a cry or sad face emoji. And then, of course, TMZ wants to pick up on this and, you know, dramatize the headline and all that stuff. But, yeah, this is happening, guys. Wow. Kind of unbelievable if you think about it. I mean, you would think that Robin Thicke just showing up at the beginning of the season and you know, fall camp would have been, you know, the weird pop star interaction with the program. You know, kind of off the wall. Robin Thicke out of nowhere, pop star showing up. Yeah, that was kind of weird, but now we get Justin Bieber, guys, talking to our quarterback, making him feel bad. And honestly think, like, what would Nick Starkle, if I were Nick Starkle, how would, like, that'd be pretty incredible. In fact, I know that Nick Starkle tried to get Ellen DeGeneres to kind of connect the dots so that he could meet him. I think in 2018, Nick Starkle made a video for this. So I know that Nick Starkle, I guess, legitimately likes him, or it's a, you know, it's a, I don't know if you call it serious, but you know what I'm saying. Nick Starkle really wanted to try to meet Justin Bieber, and he gets called out. By, it's just comical. Like, kick a man when he's down. You know what I'm saying? Like, goodness. And to kind of go along with just Justin Bieber drama that's going on with the team, let's just talk about youth a little bit. I think it's kind of interesting. I've seen a lot of people defending Morris, you know, a lot of people on Twitter and social media, and, you know, are really going after Morris and telling how mad they are at him and how disappointed and how he's terrible. Worst coach they've ever seen, all that good stuff. And then you have probably a vocal minority at this point of people kind of defending Morris in a way, you know, give him time. The team is young. Don't you know how many young players we have on the team? Don't you know this? You know, give him time. It's not his fault. And I'm just going to do this because it bugs me. It bothers me when people are just wrong or incorrect in the argument they're making. It just bothers me. I normally don't respond to it because, well, what's the point? But on this show, I'm going to list out some stats for you. I did a little bit of research, and I just want y'all to know the stats so that you don't look dumb to other people. I don't like looking dumb, so I don't want y'all to look dumb, you know. So let me lay out some numbers for you about Arkansas's youth. And let's see here. I know that in the SEC media days, that was one of the things that Chad Morris mentioned, was that we had, I can't even remember the exact number he threw out, something like 51, 53 freshmen on the team. And he spoke that, and then a lot of media members took that and wanted to ask him questions about that or make that a story. And so a lot of Hog fans are also making that a story. But realistically, guys, a lot of teams have that exact same number of freshmen on their team. A lot of SEC teams do. That is not an odd number of freshmen to have on your team. So stop using that number as the number that's weird. Let me throw some stats out at you. So you were able to pull up team rosters, of course, and see where those players, what class they're in, and where, you know, how old they are, essentially. And it's not all scholarship players. As we know, you get 85 scholarship players, but most teams have plenty of players that aren't on scholarship. So you can't take this number, let's say, just purely by the number, because some people would have more walk-ons or non-scholarship players on their team. So I even wrote out how many people teams have on their roster. So let's start with the SEC West, and let's go through each team and say how many people they list on their roster, how many they list as a freshman. And of course, when we say freshman, we kind of include both true freshmen and redshirt freshmen. And then let's go to the true freshmen as well. So I'll give you three numbers, the total on their roster and the total number of freshmen. So we'll start with Arkansas. So Arkansas lists 119 players on their team. Of those 119, 51 are either a redshirt freshman or true freshman. And 35 of those freshmen are true freshmen. Okay, so that's going to be our baseline. So let's move to Alabama. Alabama lists 125 players on their roster, so six more than Arkansas. They list 58 freshmen or true freshmen. That's 7 more than Arkansas. And they have 43 true freshmen, which is 7 more than Arkansas. So you can't make this argument, at least in my opinion, that Arkansas has more youth. We don't. That's a silly argument. We don't have more youth. In fact, we have less youth than Alabama. So let's move to some other ones quickly. Let's jump to Auburn. Auburn lists 122 people on their roster. They have 49 freshmen and 30 true freshmen. Texas A&M, they list the most on of any SEC West school on their roster at 131 players, and they list the exact same number of freshmen, 51, and 49 true freshmen. LSU lists 113 on their roster, and they've got 50 freshmen. Ole Miss, 118, 51. Now, Mississippi State, they're kind of the weird one with how with their numbers. They have 117 on their roster and 43 freshmen. So they're actually the one that, you know, if this storyline or if this were actually a true statement, they would be the team that you would point to as the norm, and they're not the norm. They're abnormal for having that little youth on their team, if that makes sense. So this story about this 53 or 51, this youth number, it's just not true. I could go into the SEC East numbers, but I don't want to bore you to death. But I will say this, though. If you want to talk about Arkansas's youth on their team, there is a better or smarter way to talk about it. And let me tell you how that would be. I looked at each team's depth chart and their two deeps. And I actually went through the whole SEC this time. I could have expanded and gone to Power 5, but I'm sure there's some Power 5 team out there that has that starting similar freshman numbers to us. But let me just kind of lay it out to you. And basically what I did, I excluded special teams because I don't really care if there's a freshman kicker. I don't care if there's a freshman returner or a freshman long snapper. I don't know. I just don't feel like those are indicative of of low talent or anything. It just seemed like the special team stats or the starters, we just leave them off. So what I did was I took the two deep or the starter and its backup in each of the offense and defensive positions and just counted how many freshmen, and by freshmen again, I mean true freshmen or redshirt freshmen, were in each SEC team's two deep. And then I also looked to see how many SEC teams are starting a freshman. So here's how the numbers shook out. So let's start with Arkansas. Arkansas is the youngest SEC team by how many freshmen they have on their two deep. We have 13 freshmen listed on our two deep. 13. There are the next closest teams, there's actually a few that are tied, are South Carolina that have 11, and Ole Miss that also has 11 in their two deep. Kentucky has 10, and Texas A&M have 10. And Georgia has 9. So you can see that there's some pretty decent teams kind of mixed in there. I don't think that it necessarily means having true freshmen in your two deep is a terrible thing. In fact, Bama has 9 as well. You know, you could totally make the case that those freshmen are probably of a higher talent level. Okay, well, that's probably fair to a certain extent. But still, that 13 number in our two deep would be the only thing you could point to as we are younger than other teams. That's it. That's the only number that we are standing out above. When you look at freshmen starting, we have 5 freshman starters. And that's not leading in the SEC. It's actually tied with 2 other teams, Alabama, who has 5, and Tennessee, who's starting 5. Now, I know that that's, I know what you're going to say or what you're thinking. Alabama has higher talent. And I looked at the numbers too. I just looked at the star rankings. So Alabama, of those 5, 1's a 5-star and 4's a 4-star. Of Arkansas's 5 freshman starters, 4 are 4-stars, 1's a 3-star. And then I looked at Tennessee's too. And for Tennessee, they actually, of their 5, have 2 that are 5-stars, 2 that are 4-stars, and 1 that are 3-stars as well. So, I do think these numbers show that we are a young team. You can't deny that, but I just don't like how people are using the wrong numbers to support that argument. And realistically, it's not as extreme as people want to think it is. If you actually want to look at the team that has the lowest youth in their two deep, it's actually Vandy. Vanderbilt only has three freshmen in their two deep and zero freshman starters. And we all know that that doesn't mean they're good. Mizzou is the other team that looks to be the eldest. They have zero freshman starters, and they have six in their two deep. And Mizzou's fine. Missouri's fine. They're an okay, you know, they're kind of an average SEC team, it seems like, at this point. So the point, the overall point I'm trying to make is don't take that number of freshmen on the team as the reason we're young, because it's just wrong. Every SEC team has about that number of freshmen. So don't argue that point. If you want to make the argument that we're just this young team and we need to grow up, use the 13 on the deep on the in the depth chart argument. That is two more than any other SEC team. Even moving aside from numbers, as I kind of mentioned at the beginning of this segment, you know, we have a starting quarterback who wears a Justin Bieber shirt and seems to be kind of a fun guy. You know, your first word from the outside might not be maturity with Nick Starkel. That's probably not the word I would use. I do think he's a mature guy, and I think he's a good person and all that stuff. He just seems like the kind of guy who's is likable and is fun. That's probably the words I would use. That's why he wears a Bieber shirt and makes that kind of a thing where he, quote, draws power from. Also, look at one of our other most senior leaders on the team, Sosa Agim. I know that he is carrying around that Chucky doll for a very real and deep reason. I know it's important to him, but it still has an appearance from the outside. Everyone, before they knew that story of why he was carrying around a Chucky doll, looked at that and said, wow, that is weird and immature. And then when you hear the story behind it, you know that he's trying to bring attention to someone who is close to him who was murdered, and he carries that doll around with him to, quote, kind of bring that person with him so he can experience it with him. But at the end of the day, you got to sit back and think, he could have chose anything to represent that, right? He could have gotten a tattoo. A lot of people get tattoos to remember people by, a lot of people. But he's doing it for a specific reason, and it's to draw a certain type of attention. And when he was even asked on why Chucky, you know, why that doll, he said because he saw it and he liked it. That was his reasoning, okay? I'm sorry, I don't think anyone would say that's a mature answer for that or something that's mature. There are things about this team that feel very youthful, and it's no shock that we are experiencing things that do feel that way, that we are growing through that youth and are having to kind of get serious and grow up. I think that that is a element that we are missing a little bit of right now. And hopefully we see that. And hopefully we develop that. And I think if we do, the season will reflect that and we'll probably see better performances. I'm going to throw this in here just to make y'all know that even when times are at their worst, when they're really tough, just know that other fan bases are dealing with what they feel like are hard times too. And I saw this and just thought it was really funny. So I'm going to read it to y'all. It's a post by a Texas A&M fan, and I think it shows where some of their heads are at. And they're at a completely different level as far as their program. They have a huge. They're hugely committed to a successful football coach who's their guy and who should be great, coming off of a loss against Auburn at home where they felt like was probably going to be their testing ground, you know, their game to prove, has their program really arrived? You know, how are they there? And of course they lost, and it wasn't a bad loss. They just got beat. It happens all the time in the SEC. Auburn's good. I mean, it's not a big deal to lose to Auburn in my mind. But when you are drinking the Kool-Aid of your fan base and how good you think you should be, it's funny how you get a little brainwashed. So let me read this to you. So this is from a Texas A&M fan that lists his name as Rendered Fat. So here you go. There is no longer any debate. A&M will never be elite, ever. We overpaid for a coach who probably doesn't even want to be here. Thought we were getting a Saban, ended up with a Kirk Ferentz. Top 25 class after top 25 class, top facilities, highest paid coach, none of it matters. As evidenced today, things are exactly like they've always been, despite Jimbo's unwarranted boasts to the contrary. No genuine issue of material fact exists that would preclude anyone from concluding otherwise. A&M is, has always been, and will always be average. If a coach like Fisher cannot exceed here, no one will ever. And nobody wants to hear this, but Singing Cadets, the Corps, all the tradition, the band, it's the only thing we exceed at. But most outsiders cringe at these things while we celebrate them. But while these things set us apart, for better or worse, football never will. It's officially over. I just love that ending. It's officially over. They lost a game. They lost on the road to number one team in the country, Clemson, 10-24. And they lost to Auburn at home, 28-20. I don't feel like it's officially over. I just don't. Maybe I'm the wrong one here, but I just think that that perfectly shows how fans just are so apt to overreact to things and how we set ourselves up for these grand things in our head. And guys, it's going to be okay. I guarantee Texas A&M, you know, they'll probably beat us. They'll probably lose to Bama, but who knows? A&M's beat them in the past. They should beat Ole Miss. They should beat Mississippi State. They should beat, South Carolina, UTSA. Who else they got? They do play Georgia, which will be a tough one in LSU. But, you know, they've got some tough games. But still, they're going to win plenty, I'm sure. You know, between LSU and Georgia, they'll probably upset one of them somehow. You know, they're pretty good. But hopefully, Hog fans can find a little bit of solace there, knowing that we're not the only ones who think we will never get better. Of course we will, guys. Of course we will. You're not going to stay bad forever. You're just not. When there's passion and when there's care, when people care about something, it's never bad for a extendedly long period of time. And I know that we as Hog fans feel like we have endured it for a long, long time because we really have. We really have been terrible for longer than we ever should. But our program got derailed hugely by Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino does not recruit well. He does not recruit character kids. He does not recruit the type of kids that sustain after him at all. It's proven. Everyone knows that about Bobby Petrino. He left. The program was junk. And it's been in recovery mode since then. And it's going to take a special coach to get us out of it. We'll get there. It's going to happen. We care too much. We care too much. We're going to be the reason it gets better. It will. Just have faith. We just have to stay patient. You know, it's okay. It's okay to not watch every game. It's going to be rough. We all know it. We wish it were better. But you know that one game that you don't watch is the game that we're going to upset the other team. I'm just telling you that. That always happens. That would be what happened to me. But I'm going to watch every game. Just know we're in this together. And don't get too downhearted. I mean, you can be upset, be frustrated, but it will get better. It won't last forever. Just have faith. Well, all right, folks. Thanks so much for listening today. I appreciate it. Y'all are the diehard. Y'all are the true fans. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Go follow the show on Twitter @humble_podcast. Follow us on Instagram @hardtobehumblepodcast. If you're so inclined, go to anchor.fm/hardtobehumble. Support the show. Help keep the mics on. I'd really appreciate it. Y'all can call or text the podcast's phone number at 615-392-0107. In fact, I want y'all to do something for me. We all know Nick Starkle ripped his Bieber shirt in half, so he's probably not going to get a replacement shirt, you know, a replacement character to wear on his chest proudly. But if we had to give him one, which shirt or who on his shirt would you want to see? My answer, I want him to have a Hacksaw Jim Duggan shirt. If you know who I'm talking about, you know, that's who he needs. Nick Starkle needs a little Hacksaw Jim Duggan. But you text, tweet me, y'all let me know which character Nick Starkle needs on his chest. And, you know, the obvious answer is probably he doesn't need one. Don't send me that. But if y'all have any good ideas, let me know. I want to hear them. I think they'd be good. And before we go, I do want to leave one final message with all you amazing Razorback fans out there. As Mac Davis taught us so long ago, it can be really hard to be humble. Really hard to be humble. Especially when you're an Arkansas Razorback fan. Thank y'all so much. Let's beat Texas A&M somehow.